Welcome to The Ugly Podcast, the place where creatives are encouraged to make messy, ugly art and to redefine their relationship to their inner critic. Every other week, I am joined by creatives of all mediums and methods to discuss our creative processes and how we navigate the mental minefield of creativity. This podcast serves as a reminder that you and your art get to be whatever the hell you want to be, ugly and all. Welcome back to the Ugly Podcast, everybody. I am your host, Lauren Alexander. I use pronouns they, them. And today I have an amazing guest with me who is a poetry writer, an avid reader, and a regular cinema goer based in Switzerland. They studied English literature and linguistics and film studies and are currently co-directing the Swiss Youth Film Festival in Zurich while honing their writing practice. They published two poetry collections and are currently guilty of having too many open projects, which I absolutely feel you on that one. Joe loves broccoli and is terrified of grasshoppers, which is really funny to me. And then yellow has always been their favorite color. Welcome. Can you please introduce yourself with your name and pronouns, please?
Hi, thank you very much first. And yes, my pronouns are they, them.
Amazing. I'm so excited to have you here. I have been watching your journey on Instagram very closely, which has been so fun to see your 91 days of writing, which congratulations, you just finished this like yesterday or 2 days ago. I can't remember exactly, but congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, yesterday, I think. Though there was a moment in which I kind of messed up with the math, so I think it will be today officially, but it's okay.
we're creative people. We're not math people. It's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Yeah, how are you feeling now that it's done, just in general?
Kind of relieved.
Yeah.
I'm very happy that I did it, but I'm not the type of person that necessarily loves being so much on social media, and I feel like I gave a lot of energy just being on Instagram, and I'm, just looking forward to take a break from that.
Yeah.
Not from writing. Like, that I'll continue, obviously, but
right.
Just the being witnessed constantly.
Yeah, being witnessed constantly is really hard, and I think I'm really grateful that you did it, especially because you even like posted on those days where you were feeling like not so inspired or embarrassed or like other kinds of crunchy things where mm-hmm. you just like are not in the mood and you still posted. And I think we like that makes me so happy. I mean, and like part of why I do like the Ugly Podcast and ugly art and things and just like wanting to show that process, because the more honest we are about how the actual creative process is, the more accessible we make it to other people. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing all that vulnerability with people. I think it's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing it. Like sometimes it was really like posting in the void and I wasn't really sure I was able to transmit anything. Mm-hmm. But it is making my heart happy hearing that it actually helped in some way, that someone appreciated and seen the effort. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me more about yourself. Tell me about your relationship to creativity throughout your life.
Mm. Yeah, creativity has actually always been very present since I can remember. Though it wasn't writing. Writing came much later. But it was something that I always like did. I remember making candles with my cousin. I remember enjoying knitting with my mother. I remember like trying to make all sort of crafts that... have you ever seen Art Attack? It's like this British no. television series. I don't know, it was very in when I was a kid. So there were these episodes and they will show you some type of art. And I remember like trying to reproduce those. Very, very crafty.
Cool.
Yeah. and then I also remember that I stole wood from my neighbors because I wanted to make my own house. So that was also very crafty and very creative of me.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get creative in how you stole the wood?
I think I could have been smarter there. Like, eventually they caught me and then I had to give up on the house.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, very. But it's always been very present. It's still now something that I really enjoy. And I wish I would do more with my hands. I wish I would, like, get more physical with materials. Now it's very much, like, typing and, like, keyboards. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and film, too. So what do you do with film?
I studied film theory and, like, history. So everything that is more on the theoretical level.
Okay, cool.
Though, originally, I did want to study, like, filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Like, there was an original idea when I was a teen. The plan was to go and study film, like, in an art school or something. But the truth is that I needed a portfolio and I didn't have one. Mm-hmm. It felt very risky. I couldn't really afford to go to an art school and then maybe not have a job ever.
Right.
So then I discovered that you can also study theory and history in Zurich. There's also a place in Lausanne that's like the French side of Switzerland. Mm-hmm. But my French was way too bad for that, so I just came to Zurich and tried to improve my German. And then I was really, really bad at English, but I kind of really wanted to be able to speak English, so I just went for it. It was hard, mm-hmm. but I think I managed. I mean, I'm here and I hope people understand me.
So, yeah, I mean, I think your English is great.
Yeah, I mean, it took a lot of film watching, actually, with subtitles. Mm-hmm. But then. And now currently film is, I mean, I am in the film industry. So mm-hmm. I work in a festival. I co-direct this festival, and it's more still not practically making films.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that does come through, though, like, in your season of writing. Like, and I know it's, like, Instagram directing, but, like, the mm-hmm. the way that you organize the films each, the reels each day, like, they're really good and very artsy and really beautiful. So I think that definitely comes through.
Wow. Like, I actually struggled so much. I think I put my phone in the most absurd places trying to, like, get an angle that it was kind of okay. So, good to hear.
So, how have you, when you filled out my questions for organizing this podcast and having this conversation, you talked about how there's no such thing as mistakes in creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask how you kind of eventually came to that conclusion and what your struggle or what your belief about mistakes in creativity has been and how it's changed.
Okay. First, a premise. I am still, like, a hill in perfectionist, I uh-huh. think. So, not just in creativity, but, like, throughout my whole life, like, in every field, I always struggled a lot with this idea of, like, I am not allowed to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would rather, like, not speak, and I would rather not move than make something that could have been possibly wrong. Or perceived as wrong.
Yeah.
But then the truth is that when I think about it, I do not know what I consider a mistake. And I do not know what I consider to be perfect. Like, I don't really have guidelines or, like, parameters. Like, and yet, in spite of this lack of definition, I still catch myself trying to make things, quote unquote, perfect.
Yeah.
So I find it very interesting. I didn't realize this until really recently that I didn't know how to define things for me. And I didn't know from where exactly came this idea that things or creative things didn't have space for mistakes. Or yeah, or that I couldn't make mistakes. But now, at least I'm trying to, I don't believe it yet, I think 100%, but I'm really trying to. I do think that it is all part of the process, mm-hmm. that I actually should make these mistakes or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And it's really all more experimenting. And also, I am allowed to correct myself. Like, I am allowed to change my mind. I'm allowed to edit, make it again from scratch. Like, it's not all just now or never, like, in truth. So, I'm not sure I remember the question. Did I answer?
You absolutely answered. I don't know if we'll ever get to a place where we truly believe that. I don't know if it's like in our capacities as mm-hmm. humans to like fully be just always okay making mistakes, or like something not being mm-hmm. how we imagine it. But I love that you called out that like I don't actually know what perfection would look like. I just like have this idea that I couldn't possibly attain it.
Yeah.
And like, I love that you called that out of like, I can't actually define what perfection even is. So why am I striving for it?
absolutely. exactly. Like, but to me, it's absurd because, you know, said like this, it really sounds like duh. but when I really think about it, I don't have a definition. I don't know what that will look like for me, or in which way do I seek it from something else? Mm-hmm. I would like to hear it from like other people. Like, do other people have definitions for those things? Or like, are they able to define what is perfect?
Right. I think a lot of times we picture what we're seeing, which we're seeing movies that are up on screens. We're seeing like art that's mm-hmm. hung in galleries. We're seeing art that people bought in their homes. So we're not necessarily seeing anything that we would make. Mm-hmm. And so therefore we're like, well, if someone wouldn't buy it, if someone wouldn't pay money, if someone wouldn't want to hang it in their house, then obviously it's a waste of time. It's not perfect. It's not good. And it's a waste mm-hmm. of time, or something along mm-hmm. those lines.
Yeah.
Which is why I love like showing the process of like making art in general, because like someone doesn't just decide to make a movie one day and come up with Pride and Prejudice. Well, I guess that was a book first. You know what I mean? That was mm-hmm. the first movie that came to my head, even though it's a book. Anyway.
That's funny. But I also find interesting that you mentioned like we see art like either bought or like shown in some place. So it's kind of attached to a certain value. Mm-hmm. Like perfection is attached to like a monetary value, I guess. It's something that needs, like, can be purchased. Otherwise, like, if it's not bought, then it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. Like something, like, I don't know if it's a straight line like that, but.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, especially like for Americans, like, we're so steeped in capitalism and like mm-hmm. the like time is money. You have to like anything you're spending your time on like has to have some kind of value. And so it's really, at least like for me, I know that when I was younger and I pictured an artist or a writer, the only people that I pictured are people who made a living off of that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I can't make a living off of something, why would I waste my time doing it?
Yeah. No, I totally get it. And it's not only like making a living, but living abundantly, like making a lot of, like more than you actually need. Mm-hmm. Like, I also only recently realized that I actually do not have to earn that much with my art to survive. Very interesting.
So fascinating.
Hey writer, are you feeling adrift in your writing practice? Like the words swept you out to sea, but you have no idea where you're going?
Climb aboard the writer's helm. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Gabby.
And we're both writers and professional editors who are here to support you on your writing voyage.
With the Writer's Helm, you get access to group co-writing sessions, Q&A sessions, our private community chat room, and group coaching calls to help you along no matter what stage of the writing process you're in.
Members of our crew have said that they've reconnected with their excitement for writing and feel energized from the support they've received from us and each other.
You can sign up for the Writer's Helm at any time, which comes with a one-week free trial to make sure that we're the right crew for you.
You don't need to navigate these stormy seas alone. Let the Writer's Helm take you to new shores. So where did you get the idea for this season of writing project that you just finished?
Yeah. Last summer in June, I think, I took part in 1,000 Words of Summer by Jamie Attenberg. I don't know if you ever heard of this.
Mm-mm.
But basically, you write 1,000 words for 2 weeks, and it's usually in June. Mm-hmm. And you sign up for this newsletter, and you get letters, like motivational letters, sort of, by Jamie, but also by other authors. And those are really encouraging, and so some are so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is just participating and writing these 1,000 words. So I did that, and I posted about it. Like, every day I made this carousel, like a photo dump type of thing. And then after those 2 weeks, I didn't write a single word anymore.
Mm-hmm. Like,
it worked perfectly. yeah, really. So... The thing is, like, the reason I decided to participate in the first place was because I wanted to get myself back in writing, because I didn't write anymore. I finished the manuscript of secondary poems, and then I just didn't write anymore. So that was months. So the idea was, okay, maybe, you know, I give myself these 2 weeks, I give it all, and then I will be able to establish a routine and also maybe in the process heal the distrust that I have towards myself and showing up for my art. Obviously, that didn't work. like, absolutely not. But in retrospective, I'm just realizing now that it was... yeah, but I didn't see how that didn't work at first. I only realize it now that I kind of... It's like I told myself, you know what, I'm going to go and run a marathon every day for 14 days with no preparation, and then I will be a runner. Like, that's pretty much what I plan to do, right? But obviously, yep. I didn't work for it before, and that was not the way to get ready for establishing a routine.
Mm-hmm.
Months later, while being on holidays, I don't even know how I came up with it, but I was very excited at the idea of autumn coming. And then I also, the thing is that I still learned something from those 2 weeks, right? Like, I learned that I can write 1,000 words, but I need accountability, and I cannot write 1,000 words every day.
Mm-hmm.
So then I decided it had to be something much more long-term, because I wanted habits to stick and I wanted to really give myself a chance. Like, just a sprint of 2 weeks wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
And also I had to make sure that it was something very flexible, because I still have a job and I still have other things going on. So I cannot spend the amount of time that I need to write 1,000 words every day, right? And yeah, then I made a list of the things that I wanted to do. And then I defined what is something that I can do every day and that possibly I'm already doing every day. So that will be my bare minimum.
Yeah, that's so important to, like, actually integrate what you already do into whatever habit you want to establish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the thing that I was already doing every day was drinking coffee and reading while drinking coffee. And I do believe that reading helps a lot my writing practice. So then it was like, okay, then the other thing that I sometimes do is also writing a couple of lines in my journal. Mm-hmm. So that I can maybe enforce and make sure that I really do it. And then I wrote a list of other things that I would like to do, and I defined as like my kind of I give it all type of level, mm-hmm. writing 1,000 words.
Yeah.
And in this way, there was really no chance that I could have failed.
Yeah.
Because I was already doing my bare minimum. And then it was just like, you know, if I'm having a good day, I can do a bit more, but I'm still making sure that I show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then what made you want to, was it the accountability piece that made you want to like post it publicly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also because I thought maybe it can be useful. Like I didn't know where it would have taken me really. But I wanted to make sure that I did show up and that maybe it could have, yeah, inspire someone or just help me a bit more.
Yeah.
And I decided to make reels, which isn't really my thing. but the truth is that I never really gave reels a chance. Like, and so I kind of also just decided, you know what, I'm also gonna just do 90 reels, see how this goes. Like, do they really work?
Uh-huh.
Like, is my account gonna explode after these 3 months?
Right.
Like, it was always an experiment in that direction. Yeah, that's probably the only thing I regret.
Was making it reels every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's... I mean, yes, I do like films and I do love cinema and I also maybe have a flair for filming, but it is so not natural for me to film myself.
To be in front of the camera is a different beast, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I didn't want to be in front of the camera. I, you know, the truth is that most of the things that I did, I was still just barely awake and in my PJ, so... I didn't exactly want to film that.
Right.
Every day.
Yep.
So I had to be a bit more creative about it and I tried different things and I think I got also lazier with time.
I think yeah. Laziness is really just us slipping into like the groove of what works. So
maybe, yeah.
I think that's a good thing. I see it as a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that I struggled. There was a moment, I think halfway, that I was really struggling because I was putting so much effort into these reels.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they were reaching the same amount of people, if even. It was not getting any easier to like film them. I felt like I was just screaming in the void.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think like at first I was really giving a lot of effort, you know, like I was like trying to film everything that was going on. I would do these voiceovers. And now towards the end of it, I will just film something 5 seconds and then I will write this huge caption. And
mm-hmm.
that was that. Also because I just had to tell myself, I'm actually not here to be a video maker.
Right.
I'm here because I want to. Yeah, like, I want to be a writer and I want to show people how I'm gonna do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the point, right? So, but yeah, it's hard to not get kind of sucked into the stress of Instagram and like the algorithm mm-hmm. and what is being shown and what not. And the numbers or so that was hard to just distance myself from it and just get back to, okay, why I'm doing this. And it's about writing. And yeah.
Yeah. Would you say that was your biggest challenge, was like actually navigating the Instagram piece of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I still plan to do a season of writing again. But I will not limit myself to doing reels. Like, if I feel like doing a reels, sure. But I can show the process, like, by taking a picture or, you know, in many other ways. Like, so
yeah,
definitely will remove that limit for myself.
Yeah, that's a good idea. What did you find most surprising about prioritizing your writing for 90 days?
That is easy. Like, I didn't think it would have been so easy. The thing is that, but of course it wasn't. Like, of course, the thing is that I worked a lot until it became easy.
Mm.
It did feel like this huge mountain and this thing that I couldn't possibly do again. But then showing up every day, I discovered again that it aligns with who I am. Like, it is what I want to do. So then it became really easy. I just had to wake up at 6:30, very reluctantly, make my coffee, and just sit down in front of my computer or whatever it was, or a piece of paper, and just write. And mm-hmm. also trust that I have something to say. Because for a while, I also started thinking, okay, this was not my dream. Or maybe writing was just really this phase that I had and something that I had to let go, that publishing in the first place was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I really started convincing myself of these negative narratives. And it, of course, then it felt very difficult.
Yeah.
But it practically wasn't. Like, once I gave myself the chance to do it, it wasn't. That was kind of surprising.
Yeah. We build it up to be, like you said, some big mountain mm-hmm. that can't possibly, it's like a wall in your face. And then when you actually start, like, oh, okay, this wall isn't real. I'm making this wall for myself. It's not real. Yeah. And also, like, it's just kind of like a little incline that also brings me mm-hmm. closer to myself, and in the process mm-hmm. like builds that confidence and strength. And like, there are like, in your process, you found what worked for you and you realized what didn't work for you, but you only found that out by doing. So like, now you know you're not going to do reels every time, but you also know I can show up and I can write every day in some small way, or I can prioritize my writing, whatever that looks like. Maybe it's not even writing that day, but I can still prioritize my creativity, my goals in some small way. And it's actually not as hard as I've been making it up to be.
Absolutely. The thing is that I am really good at putting myself limits. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know why I do that with myself, but it's really with everything. Like, another thing was that I always thought I could only write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So if I didn't have a poem in me, there was no writing that day.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and it's so...
This brain was made for poems and nothing else.
And nothing else. Like, but the truth is that in the past 3 months, I didn't write poetry.
Mm.
Like, yeah, I started up maybe 2 poems, like, and then I kind of... Now they're there in my notes.
Yeah.
But I started something else and I just gave myself the freedom to just write. So yeah, that's another thing that was also very surprising, because just removing limits
mm-hmm.
that no one else put on me but myself.
Yeah. So I noticed that when you were talking about like why you wanted to do this challenge, you mentioned kind of like a distrust in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed again, like that you mentioned like trusting yourself after this process. I think that's a really cool outcome to come mm-hmm. from this, is like going from distrusting your intuition, distrusting your, how did you phrase it? Do you remember? Reach back in time. Remember exactly what you said, please. I think it was about like distrusting yourself to prioritize your work. And you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was something along those lines. Like, I think it was distrusting that I would show up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because I always say, or for a long time, I will always say, this evening I will sit down and make something creative, mm-hmm. or like I will write, and then I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that for a lot of months, if not years, I didn't realize it, but it kind of, it wounded me in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know about this. Like, I didn't know that I could actually distrust myself. I know that I struggled trusting people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that I struggled trusting my own self to show up for my craft. Like, that was completely a new concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then when I finally saw that was the issue that was really underlying, not that I couldn't create, but just really, like, I couldn't trust myself to do it. Then I worked on that. And these 3 months really helped in that way, because I just had to show up. Also because the pride to, like, not being able to post about it and saying I showed up was way too high. Yeah.
That's where the perfectionism actually helps.
Yeah,
you.
Exactly. Like, they're... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of perfectionism, did you notice your perfectionism changing throughout this process?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think the main thing is that I realized that I enjoy making things, and that making things bring me way more joy than overthinking mm-hmm. how to make the thing in the most perfect way with no room for error mm-hmm. right away. Like, again, it's like that the kind of reaction, but I just realized that I don't need to be perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to for my writing to be perfect to help me in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, definitely. I also noticed, like, not caring anymore about my reels and just posting yeah. whatever.
That's one so, of my favorite yeah. things about continuing to show up, is just, like, eventually that feeling of, like, eh, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's yeah, fine. That,
yeah, exactly. It's fine. I showed up. I did what I had to do. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. We have this idea that everything we do has to be good or have value. This belief leads us to burnout. It can hold us back from creating altogether. But in my Ugly Art 101 course, I break down these restrictive beliefs and lead you through exercises that intentionally subvert perfectionism and bring playfulness back into your creative process. You can get the first day absolutely free by going to my website, scribeandsunshine.com, and signing up on the homepage. Join me in my weird ugly art revolution. Back to the show.
Yeah.
I have noticed for myself, I don't know if you noticed this too, but as I've, like, started challenging my perfectionism, excuse me, as I've started challenging my perfectionism and, like, is kind of stretching myself and kind of bringing myself new capacities to deal with sitting in imperfection,
mm-hmm.
My perfectionism then, like, sets a new bar for myself. Does this happen to you?
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean. It's like, I mean, I think I have this with my writing. I feel with my writing, I'm much more perfectionist than with any other thing that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I decide to sketch something, I'm not gonna have the same expectation as to when I decide to write something. Like, mm-hmm. not at all. And with my writing, like, I had a hard time publishing the second book because I kept thinking it has to be way better than the first one.
Right, yeah.
Like, the bar was so high.
Uh-huh.
Like, so high. And I don't know why I couldn't just enjoy the fact that I wrote a second book. Like,
right.
You know? But with the first one, there were, like, it was like, it had to be correct and it had to be good.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, it had to be way better. It had to really, like, show people the difference. Like, who read the first one will not have to be able to recognize that it's the same author. Like, it had to be spectacular. So, yeah, definitely my perfectionism, like, went somewhere else.
Uh-huh. That's so funny. We're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah. Damn it.
But you did it. You published your book and it's in stores and people mm-hmm. can buy it and it's awesome.
Thank you. But yeah.
Okay. So at the end of every episode, I like to ask my guests, what is something ugly you have made recently?
Yes. Actually, it's quite perfect timing because I did something, which maybe it's not necessarily ugly per se, but it's definitely odd.
We love
it. So, last Saturday, I joined this super secret, super small party. That's how it was titled. Mm-hmm. which was great, actually. And I painted. I decided to take the art supply that I gifted to my girlfriend, and well, she didn't use it, so I kind of took it back.
Well, you're not going to use it. I am.
Yeah. And I painted this image that I had in my head. It's actually a memory, because I remember that as a kid, I always struggled a lot with nightmares, and then I had this technique that I developed. I would call whatever I wanted to dream with my hand. Like, I would, like, dial in my hand and then call my dreams. Uh-huh. And I would often call strawberries.
Just, like, call them up on the hand phone? Just
yeah, exactly. And then the strawberries will come in my dream. So I kind of just started painting, well, first. Also, I painted on canvas, which I never did before. Mm-hmm. So that was a whole experiment as well. I didn't know it took so long to dry, and I was very impatient the whole thing. But so I painted this. I made it all black first, and because I wanted it to be night, and then I have these strawberries on one corner of the picture, and then very weirdly. Like, obviously I have an issue with proportions, but there are like houses and then just like a very little me with like a hand near the ear and like these numbers that like cross from the window to the sky towards the strawberries and then I'm calling.
I love that.
So, I mean, it didn't turn out that ugly, but it's definitely odd. But yeah, now it's actually, I hang it up in my bedroom.
That's so fun. I love just like connecting with our younger selves in that way and like giving voice to just the oddities that we mm-hmm. thought up in our little brains. And yeah, that's so great. Yeah.
No, it was really fun. Like, I was really happy that I put that together.
I love that you said like, it didn't even turn out ugly. It's just odd. But, like, usually when I ask people, like, what's something ugly that you made recently, it's not even what they made that stands out to me. It's, like, the smiles and the laughter that follows as people are describing the ridiculous thing that they made recently. And, like, that is just, like, so, it's chef's kiss. It's so good.
It is. I think it was really like not having the expectation mm-hmm. that it had to be beautiful. Like,
yeah,
it was just really doing it for the joy of doing it. So, yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so good. Okay, how can people get in touch with you? Where can they buy your book? And what else do you have going on in the works?
Yes. So, I newly have a website that is jobado, jobahdo.com. And there I'm trying to keep it updated with all my new things going on and the books as well. So recently I published Secondary Poems. It's been out for 2 weeks now, I think. And it's the sequel of Primary Poems. Now, I promised I did save the creativity for the poems in the books. the titles are probably maybe the ugliest thing.
I was like, wait, what are you talking about? Oh, you're talking.
The truth is that I don't know. Those were the titles that I had in my mind 3 years ago, and they just had to be.
That's fine. Is the next one going to be tertiary poems? Please say yes.
Oh my God. I was very tempted to call it like that. Or like black and white, just because those are like the colors that I would kind of miss in the collection. Well, anyway. I probably will quit colors in my poems for a moment, I think. Yes, so my book are both available in paperback and ebook, pretty much in every store, like Amazon or Barnes & Nobles or whatever, wherever you like to buy books. Then I am exactly quite present on Instagram, always under just Jobado. And I have two newsletters. One is a monthly one where I just send updates about my life, my projects, something that maybe I enjoyed and I recommend. And then I have this second newsletter, which is mostly addressed to writers or also creatives in general, because I share prompts and then where you could submit your writing or art. And then again, like some readings or something that I found very inspiring. And it's all completely for free. And I just do it mostly, again, to keep myself accountable.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all those. And thanks for being here and chatting with me. This was really fun.
Well, thank you very much for this invitation. I'm still very honored.
Well, I'm happy and I'm glad that you're here. And thank you everybody else for listening, and I hope that you all keep creating and making mistakes that aren't mistakes, and keep it ugly, everybody. The Ugly Podcast is created by me, Lauren Alexander of Scribe and Sunshine. It is produced and sort of edited, also by me, and written and directed by absolutely nobody. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate and leave a review on your preferred platform and share with the creative people in your life. If you're interested in learning more about what I do, head to scribeandsunshine.com to learn more about my Ugly Art 101 course, my perfectionism workshop, my editing services, and the Writer's Helm, which is an online community for writers co-captained by myself and Gabby Goodlow. As always, keep it ugly.